Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on King of OX.
We are back at it as we roll into the second hour of the show. We've got a lot coming up here this hour. We'll continue. We'll do a lot of college athletics this hour. We'll talk Mizzou coming up in just a few minutes in our second segment this hour. We are going to be joined by Zach Sweet. He covers Mizzou athletics for the Columbia Missourian. And he's scheduled to join us here in a little bit more than 10 minutes right here on KMOX. The World Series is going to be getting going this hour. We'll keep you updated on that. The Blues are going to get started this hour. Last night was one of those nights where you need to have multiple monitors to keep track of everything that's going on. I'll be honest with you. John Camp is here with us today. John, I never tell a lie on this show. Do you know how much I tend to watch Monday Night Football. I tend to watch the Chiefs when they're on. Do you know how much Chiefs football I watched last night?
Based off of the tone you're going with this, I'm going to guess little to none.
None. I didn't even turn the game on. I watched much of the Blues, and I watched the World Series, and I had my second, I had my iPad for a second screen if I needed it, but last night, Monday Night Football and the Chiefs were clearly number three on my list of things to watch, and it never got to a point where I went to that.
And I didn't even feel like the Chiefs played that good of a game, even though they won by three touchdowns.
Yeah, I was monitoring the game. Like, every once in a while, I would go see the score. And it was a close game in the first half. It was 7-7 at halftime. And then, 28-7 the final score? Is that right? So I didn't watch a single second of it, and that's the way things go. You told me you made it to the absolute end of the baseball game.
I did.
I wonder how many people did.
The majority of people at Dodger Stadium did. That's for sure.
Yeah, that crowd stayed. They stopped showing the Rogers Center because there was a watch party going on at the Rogers Center because that's Eastern Time Zone. So that
It was like 2 a.m. when the game ended.
It was close to 3 because it was 2 here, so that would have been almost 3:00 a.m. Whew.
Yeah.
That's a late. Can you imagine like the mom or dad that brought their kids to that? Hey, you know what? Maybe they don't get a chance to go to very many Blue Jays games. I don't know if they charged for that or not, or if it was just open, doors are open, come in, take your seat wherever you want to sit down. But can you just imagine, like, taking your kids, you're going to go do this watch party thing, you're going to go to Rogers Center, get your kids a hot dog, have some fun, then all of a sudden that happens, and it just keeps going and going and going and going.
Two full games happen.
Yeah,
over the course of 6 hours.
It's it was a fun night. Have you now? What is you do a lot of work at Busch Stadium? What is the latest that you've had to leave a game? Because I guess in recent years we've had the runner on second, so we don't get the super long games, and you haven't been doing that stuff that long. So
yeah. It probably isn't the latest I've left, but the longest. Do you remember, I believe it was not this most recent season, but last season. It was a game against the White Sox, and it was bottom of the ninth. It starts pouring down rain.
Yeah.
But we had bases loaded, and we had a rain delay, and it was like 2 or 3 hour delay. And then we get back up, bases loaded, and C.B. Buckner just wanted to go home.
Yes.
It was a horrible call. I believe that was a 1 o'clock game on a Friday or a weekend, and I didn't get home till 10 o'clock at night.
Oh, well, this year, the final game before the All-Star break was terrible.
Yeah.
I think that was Atlanta that was in town, if I remember that correctly.
That sounds right.
And yeah, that was, it was delayed most of the day. I wasn't at that one game. I'll tell kind of a funny story. Do you remember back, there was that 20 inning game between the Cardinals and Mets back in the day?
I believe I remember that.
Okay. So this is my funny story about that, because I was living in Colorado at the time. I wasn't planning on telling this story, but whatever. We'll talk about what we're going to talk about in this segment later on in the show. So it's the night of the 20-inning game. On that same night, if you remember, Yubaldo Jimenez is a former pitcher for the Colorado Rockies. On the night that the Cardinals and Mets played 20 innings, Yubaldo Jimenez threw a no-hitter for the Rockies. So I was living in Colorado at the time. I was a broadcaster for what was then the Colorado Springs Sky Sox. They were the AAA affiliate of the Rockies. And that was an off day for the Sky Sox. So I actually had a day off. And I went on a date. I was single at the time. I went on a date with this girl. And I did not enjoy the date. I did not like her very much. And then I got home and I found out, while I had been on this date, I missed a Yubaldo Jimenez no-hitter, and I missed a Cardinals-Mets 20-inning game. And that was it. That the baseball gods spoke to me in that moment, and I knew, don't even like try. I don't know if it was a first or a second date with this girl. I don't remember. But that was everything I needed to know in the moment.
Don't try again with her.
No, she's done. She's dead to me. This is, the Lord does not want me to be with this person. And then lo and behold, the next girl that I ever went on a date with is now the girl who has been my wife for over 10 years. So it all worked out.
It had to be a sign.
Yeah. So anytime somebody brings up that 20-inning Cardinals-Mets game, I always think about that. And that night that was just these two incredible baseball things happening, and how I didn't see either of them because I was on a horrible, horrible, horrible date. On one of my very few off nights that I had when I was a AAA broadcaster. So there you go. Again, that game, by the way, Toronto and LA, it is just now underway. No score. Top of the first inning. George Springer is not playing in that game. They're saying he's day to day at this point. I was talking about this with Kevin Wheeler earlier. Man, that lineup for Toronto, and I don't think it's a bad lineup, but it's incredible sometimes how you remove one individual from a lineup and how the depth of the lineup completely goes away. Because without Springer in the lineup, you're afraid of Vladimir Guerrero Jr., obviously. You respect Bo Bichette, Addison Barger, Alejandro Kirk. But man, like that just, it, you know, when you go through the Dodgers lineup, even when you're at the bottom of the order, you are, there are guys that you feel like can beat you. And it feels like there's going to be breaks in the Toronto lineup. Like once you get past the first handful of batters, you get a little bit of a break. And that just doesn't happen with the Dodgers. That's why I talk about depth of lineup a lot during the season, because I think it's one of the most impactful and powerful things you can have. If you are relentless in your approach and you have guy after guy after guy, it's the reason that the Dodgers really didn't make many changes in the game yesterday. Like they have everything they need with just about every single player in the lineup. Now, admittedly, they don't have a very strong bench, but they've got guys up and down the order that can do the job, whereas you saw Toronto being a lot more liberal in their use of the bench yesterday, where all of a sudden the game is deep into extra innings and it feels like Toronto is completely handcuffed in what they are going to be able to do. And I guess the Dodgers are handcuffed in the sense that they don't really have pieces on their bench that are going to help that much, but they just hadn't made that many moves at that point in time. And most teams in baseball, if you're not the Dodgers, if you're not the Mets, if you're not any other team, the Yankees, that try to spend a lot of money, that's how you're going to be built. I think comparing the Cardinals and Blue Jays, even though they're not comparable in who they are, comparing them in the sense of how do the Cardinals are never going to become the Dodgers. This is the point I'm trying to make. Cardinals can't become the Dodgers. They're not going to spend that kind of money. It's just not going to happen. The Cardinals cannot look at the Dodgers and say, that's who we aspire to be. No, that's not what's going to happen. Can the Cardinals look to the Blue Jays and say, that's what we aspire to be? Yeah, they can. Now, does it take getting a profoundly impactful, big-time player like a Vladimir Guerrero Jr.? Yeah, that's part of it. And the Cardinals haven't had that in a while. They have shown the ability to trade for that player occasionally. You think about Albert Pujols and him coming up. Like, going and finding that player, getting that player, acquiring that player is a really, really challenging thing to do. But if you go do that, and then you get a few other pieces, you can be the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays were a sub-80 win team last season, and this year they win arguably the toughest division in baseball and get to the World Series. That's a path to look at. You know, you can learn things from teams, and we talk a lot about Milwaukee sometimes. What can the Cardinals learn from the Brewers? We talk about Atlanta sometimes. What can the Cardinals learn from Atlanta? Well, there's something to learn from Toronto as well. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk some Missouri football. Where do they go post Bo Pribula's injury? We'll discuss that in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. You're locked into a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Have you for the next 40 minutes. We're taking you until 8 o'clock tonight. Missouri football, they are certainly in a different spot right now than they were 1 week ago. 1 week ago, we were talking about this team having an opportunity to go beat a top 10 team on the road and put together a more plausible path to the college football playoff. Not that that path has completely gone away, but they lose this past weekend to Vanderbilt. They lose quarterback Pribula, and now Matt Zollers is the guy, at least for the time being. To talk through that and much, much more, he covers Mizzou football for the Columbia Missourian. He is Zach Sweet. You follow him on Twitter at @ByZachSweet. Zach, thank you for taking some time with us today. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks for having me on, man. I'm always excited to come and talk a little bit of Mizzou football.
Yeah, absolutely. So where does this team go from here moving forward? Obviously, Pribula is out, but Zollers look really, really good, and they still have a couple games on the schedule that if they were to win those and win out, there's still very much a path to the college football playoff. Like, from just a big picture view, where is this program at right now?
Right. When you see Bo Pribula go down the way he did on that 4th-and-2 and in the state of the game, in the state of the season, my immediate reaction, I think among others, other fans, was, man, Missouri season might be over. But then Matt Zollers comes into the game, and for the last quarter and a half, he looked fabulous. I mean, the poise he had in the pocket, he took his time going through reads. When a throw wasn't there, he had the poise to throw the ball away. He picked up the blitz really well, and I mean, I know he's a true freshman, but you don't have any leeway going forward. It's a tough stretch, but Matt Zollers looked really good. 14-23, 138, and a touchdown. I mean, it's hard not to be excited about the future of the program. Maybe not this season, but Matt Zollers being a true freshman, he will be here the next 2 years. So it's going to be exciting to watch his development, especially over the next four games and his first couple of starts.
We're using a highly touted quarterback. Obviously, there was a very high ceiling for him going into this year, but he came into the year as the third string quarterback and gets to this point thanks to two separate injuries. Were you surprised at just how good he did look against Vanderbilt?
Yeah, I mean, I was shocked. I didn't expect him to come into the game like that and look as good as he did, especially we know he's a great passer, and that's what he was recruited to do with his arm. But, I mean, there's no way you can say you were expecting him to look like that in his first meaningful action for Missouri. I wrote about it yesterday. Eli Drinkwitz talked to us before the season about how he was going to be the future of Missouri's quarterback. But nobody expected them to get here this year, especially with the quarterback competition they had with Sam Horn and Bo Prabula. So seeing them both go down is obviously unfortunate, but you're getting a glimpse into what Drinkwitz has said himself was going to be the future. It just has come a little bit early here.
We all know how college football works, where players get recruited every single year. They go into the transfer portal. There's NIL money to be had. Even if Drink is telling Zollers that you're the future here, if there's a program out there that thought that they could give him an opportunity, they're probably knocking on that door. Is there actually maybe a little bit of a benefit to him playing this year and that path being more cemented for him moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely a path in that sense. Like we saw last year with Williams Wanieri, Missouri got, of course, the five-star recruit, and he transferred out just as quickly as he came. We never really got to see him have a chance with Missouri. So getting Matt Zollers this game action for four games here, if Zollers looks the part, there's no reason to think he might not be the starter on day one next year. So, yeah, I mean, there's definitely could be a benefit to this. Obviously, Missouri's expectation coming into the year was to go to the college football playoff, and I definitely don't think anyone had in the bingo card a true freshman leading them there. But here we are with 4 weeks left in the season. If Missouri runs the table, it's an uphill battle, don't get me wrong. But if Missouri runs the table, that's where we find ourselves right now.
It's a double-edged sword with 2 weeks leading into Texas A&M. It's good for Missouri in the sense that they can install the offense with Zollers the way they would like to and really work him hard for a couple weeks. On the other side of things, A&M is also going into an off week, so A&M gets 2 weeks to prepare. So you got to think that A&M is going to be ready for Zollers.
Yeah, definitely. And especially they'll get to see, I mean, what is on tape of Zollers. There's not much, actually, because, of course, Zollers was hurt last year. His senior year of high school, he suffered a lower leg injury and was out for most of the year. So there actually isn't a ton of film on him over the past year and a half. But you definitely figure A&M will be more prepared than Vanderbilt was. Vanderbilt, of course, wasn't expecting to see Zollers in that game. And this A&M team is dominant. I mean, both offensively, defensively, they don't really have a weak spot. They are one of the best teams in the country. They're 8-0, and it's definitely an uphill battle. There's no denying that.
We were talking with Zach Sweet. He covers Missouri for the Columbia Missourian. The schedule is what the schedule is, but in some ways, has the scheduling come back to hurt Missouri a little bit because they had such an easy schedule in the early going. They didn't go on the road. And now all of a sudden you look at who they've been against Alabama, against Auburn, and against Vanderbilt. It has looked different. Did the schedule maybe not prepare them for this stretch the way they would have liked to have been prepared?
Yeah, it's tough to say that, though, because that's also a double-edged sword because the schedule set them up for six straight home games to start the year more than anyone else in college football had. Definitely there's a fact, an element of that. You didn't get to experience a road game. You didn't get to experience a tough team. But Missouri had every opportunity in the world against Alabama and Vanderbilt to win both those games. And all they really needed to do was go 2-1 in that stretch of three games of Alabama, Auburn, and Vanderbilt to put themselves in a really realistic position here to go 3-1 down the stretch. And you can't account for injuries either. So it's really, I think it's pretty tough to blame or fault the schedule for this. But yeah, now you're looking at four in a row you have to win against a really, really good A&M team. And then back-to-back road games to end the year against Oklahoma and Arkansas. So for sure, the schedule is not where we thought it would be heading into this point, going into the season.
Who is this team from a run game perspective? Because we saw the numbers that Hardy was putting up and the team overall was putting up. He's not the only guy who's had success on the ground, but they've had a really hard time running the ball during this period that we just talked about.
Yeah, no, 100%. And especially with all the hype and national attention Ahmad Hardy got in the first 6 weeks, I believe it was. And rightfully so, he deserved it. He looked awesome. Alabama and Auburn's run defenses are both phenomenal, so it's hard to plague Hardy for that, especially because the offensive line was struggling to get any push. Hardy ran for 110 yards in those two games, but he had a pretty nice bounce back week against Vanderbilt. He actually looked pretty good. He had 20 carries, about 100 yards on the ground. Of course, he couldn't get into the end zone. Missouri couldn't really finish any of their drives. But I think that was a pretty solid bounce back, and I'd expect to see Hardy flourish the rest of the year, especially given the true freshman at quarterback and all the circumstances heading into it. I'd expect Ahmad Hardy to finish the year strong. I still think he's a fantastic runner, and the thing with Ahmad Hardy that isn't getting brought up enough, in my opinion, he's still a sophomore, and I mean, the fact that he has looked this good is brilliant, and I think Ahmad Hardy is still a key piece in the next 4 weeks, and then, of course, next year as well.
Couple more minutes with Zach Sweet covering Missouri for the Columbia Missourian. What's the feeling right now in Columbia as Eli Drinkwitz's name keeps getting connected to just about every college football coaching job that comes open?
Yeah, so Dave DeArmond actually had a great video today on PM and AM. For anyone that hasn't seen it, I would highly recommend it. But he basically broke down what my sense has been for the last couple of weeks here, which going into that Vanderbilt game, I figured it was especially big, not only for college football playoff implications in Missouri's future, but also for Drink's future, because now you're looking at a Missouri team that has to run the table four games in a row. And if they lose to Texas A&M, they could be potentially eliminated, probably eliminated from the college football playoff on November 9th. And that's really, really important, especially with how crazy this coaching carousel is. There's going to be these openings, Florida, LSU, Penn State. We already see it. Auburn might become open. All these jobs that are very high-profile coaching jobs, and these programs are going to want a coach that's going to be readily available to come in and recruit as early as December. And if you're looking at the top targets, Drinkwitz's name comes up. Another name that comes up a ton is Lane Kiffin. And Lane Kiffin's team is set up to make a deep college football playoff run. And if that happens, Drinkwitz could easily slot in ahead of him in a lot of these job searches because teams are eager to get a coach who's going to be able to recruit for next year right now. So I think that's why that Vanderbilt game was so significant. And you're going to continue to hear Drinkwitz's name.
It seems like anything he has asked for at Missouri, he has gotten. Is that... are we at another point where another contract extension, more money for assistant coaches, more money towards facilities, like all these things that Missouri has really already done? Is there more that can be done?
Yeah, there's. I mean, you can offer him another extension. We saw what Cignetti did a couple weeks ago. I don't think Missouri is going to do that during this season, but I wouldn't be shocked to see that because Drinkwitz is the guy. Everyone at Missouri within the program, there's no real worry right now about him leaving, as far as, to my knowledge at this point. And, of course, he's going to be rumored in all these talks, but if you can lock him down to a deal like that, that'd be awesome for Missouri. They want to keep Drinkwitz. You've seen what he's done with the program. He's put them in a position, in the position they're in now, to be a college football playoff contender year in and year out at the moment. The recruiting is good. He's gotten everything he's wanted. There's no reason to think that. And I'm not saying Florida is a much better job than Missouri. By no stretch of the imagination, you can definitely make an argument Missouri is as good a job as Florida right now. But if a school like LSU comes calling, that might be a little bit of a different story. But Drinkwitz, yeah, he right now is still in a position where he's gotten everything he wanted. And if he wants to be at Missouri, he's going to be at Missouri, of course.
That's interesting you say that, because I guess sometimes I evaluate jobs based off their ceilings, not based off their current status. I think if we're talking current status and you compare Missouri to a Florida, even to an LSU, you're very comfortable where Missouri's at. But maybe it's an outside perception. It feels like the ceiling can be higher at those places, that it's easier to recruit to those places, that there might be more resources. Are you basically contending that, no, that's not the case, that a ceiling at Missouri can be the same as a ceiling at Florida?
No. I agree with you on that. The ceiling at Florida and the ceiling at LSU is obviously greater than the ceiling at Missouri right now. But I'm definitely saying that with the NIL era and the way Missouri has invested in its athletic program and given Drinkwitz everything he wanted and the state Missouri's in with its recruiting, I'm not saying they're going to be able to compete with an LSU or a Florida, but I'm saying Drinkwitz might feel he's in a really good spot at Missouri right now. And why would Florida be that much better of a spot right now than Missouri is in where he's at in the state of the program? That's all I'm saying.
No, that makes sense. And also, again, if the money's there and if schools come calling, we'll see what happens. But it almost feels like for Drinkwitz to really get to where, I don't know, to maximize his earning potential somewhere else, it would help if he had a college football playoff appearance on that resume.
100% I agree that would help him. But even just looking at what Missouri has done over the last three seasons now, I think you're able to say Eli Drinkwitz has put Missouri in a position to be there. And I don't think you can take away from what he's done here.
No, I don't think so either. Zach Sweet, yep. He covers Missouri athletics for the Columbia, Missouri, and follow him on Twitter at @ByZachSweet, SWEET. Zach, I enjoyed the conversation. Thanks so much. We'll do it again sometime.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Very good. That's Zach Sweet joining us. He brought up some good stuff there. Enjoyed being able to talk to him about all things Missouri football. Okay, this is what I wanted to get to today. Appreciate this is what we're going to talk about in the first segment of this hour before I decide to talk about my horrible date on the night of the Mets-Cardinals 20-inning game, but we will get to it. It seems like the NCAA might be pumping the brakes a bit on loosening up gambling standards for people connected with the NCAA. I'll explain all of that coming up in just a moment as we roll on with the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. I have about 22 minutes left in the program. We're taking you until 8 o'clock tonight. We'll be back with you tomorrow as well, 6 to 8. Thursday, we'll have the short show because of Thursday night football. So I want to be careful on how I walk down this path because in no way, shape, or form am I an anti-sports gambling person. In fact, as we talked about when the arrests were made by the FBI, specifically of Miami Heat's Terry Rozier, that got caught. Him, the irregular betting activity was flagged because of the legalization of sports gambling. These things, I promise you, have been happening for a very, very long time. But before there was legalized sports gambling in places outside of Las Vegas, if you wanted to go take Terry Rozier and the under, you went to your local under-the-table bookie, or you went or you tried to do something internationally. I guess the point I'm making here is that sports gambling, even though it had been illegal, has been happening, and now that it's going to be legalized, it's regulated and monitored. So years ago, months ago in some places, probably years is the better thing, but you get the point. You want to go, you've got a deal with an athlete that they're going to take themselves out of a game, they're going to do this, they're going to do that, and you go bet on it, it's really not going to get caught. You don't have the mechanisms in place to be able to catch it. So that's where I actually think legalized sports gambling has been a benefit, because when stuff is going on that's not quite right, it's going to get caught easier. That doesn't mean by any stretch of the mind that I think you should just open up the doors wide open and anybody can gamble on anything and just very little regulation and all that. That is not true. And there's a lot of shades of gray. One of those shades of gray is college athletes betting on professional sports. If you did not know, that had not been allowed. And I would actually say rightfully so, because there's just too much of a connection in what's going on. There's if you're playing at a college and one of your buddies you were alongside with last year and now they're in the NFL or they're in the NBA, whatever, there's a connection there. So it just opens up the door for some improprieties that you want to stay away from when it comes to college athletics. So we had talked about it on this show that the NCAA was going to change their rules to allow college athletes to bet on professional sports. Can't bet on college sports, obviously, but to bet on professional sports. Ross Dellinger from Yahoo Sports does a good, really good job covering college football. he wrote about this then, and he got a copy of the memo. A memo was sent to the NCAA last week from SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. And in that memo, he urged the NCAA to rescind their decision to permit college athletes to wager on professional sports. In that memo, he described it as a, quote, major step in the wrong direction. He went on to say any concerns over a previous policy to prohibit athletes to bet on sports should be addressed not through a wholesale removal of guardrails, but careful refinement of the policy. Said that the reversal of the ban threatens the integrity of competition, makes athletes more vulnerable to exploitation. What might begin as casual betting can quickly spiral into something far more serious. The memo states, the SEC's presidents and chancellors believe the NCAA should restore its prior policy or a modified policy communicating a prohibition on gambling by student athletes and athletic staff, regardless of the divisional level of their sport, unquote. Since that memo was sent, the NCAA did announce that they are delaying the effective date of their sports betting legislative change to November 22nd. And that is going to allow them to talk about this a little bit more here moving forward. You know, sometimes in life, like, this can be like even a political thing, and I'm not trying to go down a political path here by any stretch of the mind. But sometimes you see something where somebody wants to make a decision and all the stakeholders disagree with that decision, yet this one single entity or this one single person tries to plow forward with this thing that they want to do. And that largely seems to be what's happening right now with the NCAA. And I don't want to get caught in the weeds here because this new legislation, it does separate like D1, D2, D3, different rules for different athletes at different levels. That doesn't really matter for this point right now, because what it does is it puts you on the path of all collegiate athletes being able to gamble on professional sports at some point, which is what most people involved in college athletics does not want to see happen. In fact, in that memo from Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner, he states that speaking with his colleagues, commissioners from other leagues, that they are also just as against it. So I guess that presents the question, if the SEC is against this, if the Big Ten is against this, if the Big 12 is against this, if the ACC is against this, if whatever the Pac-12 is against this, if the Mountain West and the American Athletic Conference and Conference USA and everybody is against this, then what's the reason for moving forward? And they were going to first loosen up the regulations when it came to Division II and Division III. And what I'm guessing, I don't know this for sure, I should talk to like a D2 or a D3 AD at some point in the near future to maybe get a little bit more insight into this. But what I would guess is the NCAA has basically said, we can't enforce this. This is unenforceable. When you think about Division II and Division III athletes and how many institutions there are and how many college athletes they are, you can't enforce this anymore. So why have the rule in the first place? That's what I would guess would be kind of the reasoning. Maybe I've got that completely wrong. But that's why I think that the D2 and the D3 loosening up was going to happen first. That's a ridiculous thought, if that is the thought. And I'm putting words in their mouth, and that's a dangerous thing to do. But let's like play out that idea for a second. The comparable idea there would be, you know what? We don't have enough police to enforce the speed limits on this road, so let's just get rid of speed limits. No, you don't do that. That makes zero sense. You can have a rule in place that you know it's going to be hard to enforce. You can even have a rule in place that you really don't plan on enforcing unless there's really a reason to do it. Guess what? If some D3 tennis player decides to bet on the Lions this weekend, it's not a big deal. It's against the rules. If somehow the NCAA finds out about it, they can punish that person. But that's one of those things where it really isn't a big deal. It doesn't matter. But having those rules in place in case something does become a big deal, or in case you do find out about it, and obviously as it trickles up, because you know what is a big deal? It's a big deal if a college football player who's a junior or a senior and is going to get drafted soon and is really good friends with somebody who plays for the Lions because they were teammates at the college the year before, and he found out that somebody with the Lions isn't going to be playing this weekend or is compromised and goes and bets on it, that's a problem at that point. So that's it's different from both sides when you compare the different levels, but that's the slippery slope that you start to go down that I think the NCAA 100% has to be able to avoid. And it's easy to avoid it. It is so easy to avoid it. With all due respect to the good people in Indianapolis at the NCAA, I don't understand what motivated them to want to make this rule change. Because it doesn't make sense. You don't have to enforce the rule if you don't want to in areas where it doesn't have much of an impact. But all athletes and all staffers know what the rule is and know that they shouldn't be doing it. It's the same thing. Sometimes I speed, like most people. If I get pulled over, I knew what the rule was, even though most of the time I'm not going to get pulled over. And compared to most people in St. Louis, I'm probably a slower driver. My wife makes fun of me all the time. She says I'm a slow driver. My wife, all the time. She, when we're in a hurry and we need to get somebody, come get somewhere, she wants to drive because she claims that she drives faster than me. I don't know if that's true. I don't think it's true. But it's a sidebar to this conversation. One last break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up this edition of the program. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on Camo X. If you are a country music fan, you might recognize this music as Brad Paisley. John Camp, are you a country music fan?
I listen to just about everything. Country is at the very bottom of that list.
Do you have any? Oh, it's on the bottom of the list.
It's not that I hate it. It's not my thing.
Do you have any idea why I asked you to play a Brad Paisley song? Did you see this today?
I think I know. Okay. He's just been related to all the long World Series games over the last couple of years.
Yes. So this is good. Brad Paisley has sung the national anthem for 4 World Series games in his life. World Series game number 2 in 2017. That game went 11 innings. Ooh. World Series game number 3 in 2018. That game went 18 innings.
At Dodger Stadium as well.
World Series Game 1 in 2024, that game went 10 innings. And yesterday, he was the national anthem singer for another 18-inning contest. 4 national anthems for Brad Paisley, and 4 extra inning World Series games. Does he get booked again?
Depends on how the ratings were, I guess.
Guys, I wonder. I would like to see how ratings dropped off as the night went along, because I know, like, I stayed up last night, but not everybody did, and would be interesting. But there you go. Brad Paisley is the one to blame. If you are tired today because you stayed up till 2 o'clock in the morning, you have one man to blame, and that man is Brad Paisley, who is solely responsible for last night's game going 18 innings. By the way, Toronto is up 2-1 on the Dodgers. That game is in the top of the third inning in L.A. And the Blues and the Red Wings, they are 1-1 with about a minute and a half to go in the first period. The Blues did score first before the Red Wings tied it up. That's it for this Graybar Sports Open Line. Talk to you tomorrow here on KMOX.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EAR-POD-1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.